Ave and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast looking at the lives of some of the ancient world's most famous figures. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me as always is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. This is episode XVII, Claudius Conquers Britannia. When we last left the story of ancient Rome, the unlikely figure of Claudius had been made emperor. And while he has the background of a scholar, he's got no military track record of his own. And this is a problem that he is quick to address. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
Famously, Julius Caesar went to Britain twice in the 50s BCE while he was in Gaul. He went there, the first time was really very quickly, and the landing was very bad. The second time he was there for a little bit longer and fought with some of the locals. But there's no invasion, there's no idea that there's going to be any permanent Roman presence there. And if you think about the context, when we get to Claudius, that's 100 years ago. So Julius Caesar went there. Nobody really has made any inroads into Britain. I prefer to call it Britannia since then. And it's a really big deal conceptually for the Romans, because if you look at a map now, you think of the distance between northern France and southern England as being very, very close. It's just the English Channel, and at its narrowest point, it's not that far.
It's a few hours on the train.
Yeah, exactly. There's a tunnel. But for the Romans, they described it as crossing ocean. They thought of the ocean as encircling the earth, and Europe was obviously this big landmass which they were most familiar with. But going over to Britannia was crossing ocean. It's almost like going to another world. And so whoever conquers ocean, as it were, is going to get a lot of prestige from this. It's a sort of double-sided, being quite scared of doing it, but also if you actually achieve it, then that would be amazing.
It seems a bit surprising then that it took 100 years until Claudius to actually attempt it.
Well, of course, the Romans had been a little bit sidetracked by things like civil wars in the meantime. Mm. And then when Augustus comes to power, his policy mostly is to keep the Roman Empire stable, which is not surprising after a series of civil wars, that he just wants to have security, as it were. So although there are certainly wars, skirmishes, battles in Germany and Germania and out east in Parthia, he shows no interest at all in crossing over to Britain. But you might remember from the Caligula podcasts that there is a sort of idea that Caligula will cross ocean.
He collected seashells as a bit of a victory, didn't he?
Yes, he had his soldiers collect the seashells and then brought them home for the triumph. So the idea is still there, and Caligula does it in this sort of crazy, maybe satirical way. When Claudius comes to power, he decides this will be his big achievement. This is going to be the military achievement that nobody ever thought he would have, because he's never been involved in the military because of his disability. So he needs a triumph. He needs a big, showy conquest. And this is probably the reason that he decides to do it at this point.
So from a practical standpoint, what does conquering Britannia offer? Is it rich in resources? Is the people of Britannia comparable to Rome at all?
The Romans think of the Britons as being like the Gauls, and they are related to them ethnically. They're supposed to have Druids. They are, in fact, the font of Druids. But they don't really think of there being very much there worth getting. So there's a geographer called Strabo who was writing under Tiberius who said, you know, we haven't bothered going to Britannia because there's nothing there worth having, quite frankly. Now, this might not have been widely shared. Certainly, we know there was lots of tin in southern England, in Cornwall.
But that's a retrospect.
They seem to have known there was some there. They might not have known it was such a rich resource. They certainly made use of it when they got there. It's more about the kind of prestige you can get from this conquest. All right, it's conquering the barbarians who are the other side of this body of water. And they do think of the Britons as being a sort of more primitive version of the Gauls. So there may also have been a kind of, you know, we can civilize the northern barbarians as well. They don't actually know the extent of Britannia, though. They don't know at this point that it's an island. It might go on and on and on further north. Remember, Caesar has only been to southern England as it is now. So it's kind of by hearsay and rumour that they know anything about what goes on further north.
So Claudius has no military experience directly and is hardly in a physical state of being able to lead this sort of campaign. So who does he send in his place?
Yeah, he doesn't go initially. He sends a man called Aulus Plautius, who carries out a campaign that seems to be reasonably efficient, although we're told, and here we mostly rely on the Greek historian Dio, that the troops were scared to cross ocean, to cross the English Channel initially, and had to be sort of persuaded into it. The account is mostly positive when Aulus Plautius gets there, so he sends the troops over in three separate lots. He probably remembers that Julius Caesar had trouble landing, so he doesn't send them all over in one. The problem he has really is engaging the Britons. They don't seem to want to fight. They just run off to the swamps. But when they do come out and fight, it's mostly skirmishes, and they keep retreating, and they know the landscape. So he does things like he's got German troops, lots of mercenaries. He sends the Germans over the rivers. Apparently they know how to swim over rivers, even in heavy armor. And there are various skirmishes, but he clearly gets to a point, or at least the way that it's represented afterwards, is he gets to a point of a sort of a stalemate where he needs a bit more, the troops need a bit more encouragement. So they send for Claudius, and Claudius actually does come out on campaign.
Right, right. So at this point, the campaign sounds like it is relatively unresisted. There isn't a lot of resistance against them, but at the same time, it might be a bit draining simply because they're having trouble getting the Britons to fight them.
It's not the kind of warfare they're used to with big-scale armies, yeah. Right? The Britons probably have, different kinds of weapons, certainly, and they won't have the same kind of troop movements. And indeed, the Britons don't seem to be ready for the encounter when they get there. The presumption is that the Britons had heard that the Romans were reluctant to cross over, so they thought they weren't going to come. And then all of a sudden, the Romans are there. So they do have the surprise attack element going there. Now, I'm a little bit suspicious, maybe I shouldn't be, of Dio's account here that, you know, things weren't going well, so they had to send for Claudius. That sounds to me like something that's presented to give a positive view of Claudius. Maybe
a bit of propaganda there.
Yeah, part of the imperial propaganda.
But nobody got hurt by propaganda back in those days.
The way it's presented is that Claudius is quite a go-ahead military figure at this moment, that he does actually lead his troops into battle. And he's given an ovation by his troops, which means they sort of show their respect to him. They show that they honor him and that he's declared imperator, their commander, their general, several times, which is not meant to happen. It's only meant to happen once during each campaign. And that various Britons declare their allegiance to him. He's basically carried out the conquest and he can come back and get his triumph. So Claudius goes back to Rome to receive his triumph, which is a huge honour and one that nobody can have imagined that he would ever get. And he leaves Aulus Plautius there, no longer as so much as the military commander, but actually as the governor, as the propraetor, the man who kind of rules in his stead. And what that means is that Britannia is now a province. Right? It's not just somewhere where you've gone and done what Julius Caesar did, which is gone over and won a few battles and come back. But don't think of this as the whole of Britain. Certainly not the two islands of Britain and Ireland. Ireland, in fact, is never conquered by the Romans. But it's not even the whole of Britain. It's basically southern England and a little bit of central England at this point. That is the province. So there's a lot of Britain that still remains unconquered, where there is no Roman presence. Now that would change over the years. And as we go through these podcasts, we'll see that there's an increasing presence in Britain and the province grows and it goes further north. It'll incorporate Wales and it will go right to the top of northern England, into Scotland even, although there's a retreat from that.
So after his triumph, and the perception that Britannia is now conquered and a province of Rome, how do they get on with the Britons? Is their rule accepted smoothly?
No, it's not. We're going to see various uprisings happening, and the famous one is Boudica, which happens under Nero, who's the next emperor. But Claudius, at least, doesn't seem to treat the locals that badly. In fact, as a sort of, you could say it's an episode of mercy that one of the most troublesome commanders, Caradocus, isn't paraded in the triumph and then executed. as, for example, Caesar had done with the Gallic chieftain, Vercingetorix. He is given land to live on and a pension and just lives out his days in peace.
Yeah. There was one figure in this whole invasion that's worth keeping track of in the future, isn't there?
There's a future emperor fighting in Britannia at this time under Aulus Plautius. And again, he's not a man at this stage you would expect to be an emperor. He's called Flavius Vespasian. And he is, you know, a sort of middle-level military leader. He's reasonably successful, but he's going to come back into things after Nero. So listen out to hear more about Vespasian.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. And you've been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, please subscribe on iTunes, leave us a review there, or tell your friends about it. A big hello in particular to all our Canadian listeners. This podcast has been put on a big banner on their iTunes store, and that spent the week there getting hefty attention. You can follow both Rhiannon and myself on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I'm at Nightlight Guy. And there's a Facebook page for Emperors of Rome as well. So track it down, give it a like, and join in the conversation. Join us for the next episode of the podcast, which I promise will be longer than this one, where we look at the rest of Claudius's time as emperor. Until then, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.